Burping is a privilege, and it's an amazing thing. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking with guest Scott Froelich. He is the blogger behind A Man's Guide for Appropriate Behavior in the 21st Century, and we get into it.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Tim Wick.
Hello there.
Hello. And we are joined today by fellow amazing person who's fighting for justice in this world, Scott Froelich.
Hi.
Yes. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
So Scott is the creator and curator of A Man's Guide for Appropriate Behavior in the 21st Century.
Indeed.
And it's a blog.
It is.
And where can we find it? Just off the bat.
Yeah, it's 21stcenturymen.tumblr.com.
Excellent. All right. And so you explore just kind of, I mean, really the title says it all, but what it's like for men in this brave new world and how they can behave like fucking adult humans and not bitch babies.
Yeah.
So is that a succinct enough?
Yeah.
It's probably not the way you say it on the website.
But. No. And on the website, I only ever described it the once, and I feel like I should probably like go back and re-boilerplate it. You know, basically the title is kind of a misnomer, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because the idea is that we used to have all of these really firm notions of what masculinity is and the way that men should behave and be men and manly and that they're all kind of bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
And that, so each week I go back and Tim has written for this before as well. You know, each week we go back and we look at, you know, here's a behavior that actually doesn't have to be defined as masculine. Here's a way that you can be a human being as opposed to here's how to be a man.
Right.
So the idea is, you know, reel them in with a title that says how to be a man, and then it turns out, oh no, it's just how to be a human.
I imagine it's also but also a human who identifies as a man or as it experiencing masculinity in this modern world.
Yes, it's very specifically aimed towards cishet men.
Sure, yeah. Because I feel like, and I mean, yeah, you three cishet dudes, just feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
I'm assuming
sure.
I shouldn't assume. If it were women and other non-binary and trans folks tend to have already experienced a lot of the how to behave without the privilege of having the what is hitting the door? I'm sorry, something
it's
is just
cat.
Like there's like
it's
a
the
ghost
cat.
Just like attacking
no, the
door.
The kitten, the kitten is right now like let me in. Whatever is going on
sorry,
the other side of the door.
Throwing me off my pontification game. But yeah, I think that cishet white men need that more than other people.
Yeah, very much so. There was a study, and I can find this later if needed, but there was a study done about the psychological differences between men and women, and it turns out it starts happening at about 6 months, and it starts happening because every time a little boy starts crying, parents go, shh, whereas when girls do, they pick them up and they hold them.
Oh, wow.
And it's so these distinctions aren't biological, but they start very, very early on, and so as boys and men grow older, they tend to think, well, men do this and women do this,
yeah.
But that's not really the case.
So early that it could be interpreted as biological,
I mean,
or as like an innate,
right.
as an innate attribute or something.
And parents aren't doing it intentionally. You know, they
sure.
were raised this way. The people who raised them were raised this way, and it becomes a very sort of entrenched thing. But it's really more of a socialization thing than it is a biology thing.
What's really interesting about that it being something that's that early on in infancy, I mean, really, is because one of the things I think is so fascinating, I have a friend at work, he's trans, and we talk a lot about what it was like, what it's like for him as a man who was, you know, raised with a lot of these, the way that you're raised with a lot of femininity. And, you know, he feels like he's a very empathetic individual. He's more sensitive to a lot of the people around him. And a lot of that is because he was conditioned to be that way, because women are often, we are conditioned to be caretakers, social, you know, make sure everyone's happy, make sure everything's taken care of. At least in my family, we really were. That was the role. Even my mom, who is, you know, she did that 80s superwoman thing, career, mom, everything, perfect everything.
Has it all.
Has it all. Yeah. Loves it all. Cries at night. You know, like, you know that kind of thing. But
I can bring home the bacon.
Yeah, but
fry
even
it
she,
up in a pan.
She'd internalized the misogyny that her own mother had of sure. She was a housewife who took care of everyone, you know? Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Hmm.
I think, what have you experienced on your site? Have you experienced any negativity?
Not on the Tumblr itself, actually. I cross-post it to Facebook, and on the Facebook page, we usually do get, you know, some guys who come in and they're like, you know, what do you know about, you know, a guide to how to be a man? I'm like, you know what, I'm really interested in your thoughts. Can you expand on that a little
yeah.
bit?
Yeah.
I'm guessing you don't get taken up on that seriously.
Well, what's really interesting is that the guys who do this, almost to a person, will say, well, okay, I admit it's well-written. And then that's it. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Because there isn't, you know, I think if you are approached in such a way as to say, hey, look, I was shortchanged mm-hmm. in my emotional development. You were shortchanged.
Mm-hmm.
We owe it to ourselves to try to investigate that. On some level, I think that does connect with them.
Out of curiosity, do you mostly have men who write for the site?
It's been exclusively men.
So I mm-hmm. wonder if, because I know one of the reasons we wanted to talk today was about the whole Gamergate scandal and things.
Right.
I wonder if a big part of that was the journalism that they were taking issue with was coming from women. And if maybe when because they see that authority in that way, men see the authority of other men and recognize it. I mean, I feel like it's almost on a subconscious level. They don't even realize they're doing it. That can be seen as, well, I can see it as being well-written, as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, a lot of the stuff Anita Sarkeesian did,
oh, yeah.
I mean, was very well explained, well-written, well-thought-out. Yep. Lindsay Ellis does a lot of well-thought-out stuff, and no one, just people don't pay attention mm-hmm. because they just see a woman and they're like, oh, fuck you, what do you know?
And Anita constantly has to turn comments yeah. off on her YouTube channel
yeah.
because of
absolutely.
The vitriol that
and that's,
comes with
yeah.
it.
So one of the things we wanted to talk the most about was mm-hmm. just, I mean, everything that happened with Gamergate was pretty mm-hmm. insane. I think we're all, I would hope that our listeners are fairly familiar with what that was.
Right.
I know there's that constant joke, it's about ethics in video game journalism, actually.
Right. Actually.
Actually, I just really wish that video game journalists were held to the standard that they should be held to, but what it actually was about
right.
was rampant misogyny and rape threats and, you know,
right.
sexual abuse.
Men feeling like their identity is a gamer, and when you try to change that identity or open that identity to other people that aren't the same as them, their identity gets questioned in a way that makes them react really, really violently.
I mean, I think
not necessarily physically,
maybe even saying men feeling like a space that was theirs was mm. being invaded by individuals who were not them.
Yeah, and you know, I work in the game industry. It's board games, but still, I had just a couple years ago a guy come up to me at a con and I was working. And he felt the need to talk at me for about 10 minutes about how, well, we both understand that, like, you know, there's just too much forced diversity in games, right? And I'm like, yeah, I think it shouldn't be forced. I love when it's organic. Like, all of the games I've never seen it forced, actually. You know, where are you seeing it forced? He's like, well, just, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, and they've got women being pirates, and, like, that's, like, women weren't pirates, and I'm like, actually,
dragons,
can I,
pal.
Yeah, I know, and it was, he just kept doing this, like, this thing, and I mean, we're all white people here, that thing that other white people do when they want you to be racist with them, where they go, well, I mean, you understand what I'm saying,
yes.
hoping that you'll go, oh, I mean, I get it, but,
right,
and
right.
I just was like, no, explain it to me.
Yeah.
Explain it to me.
Please be open and frank about your sexism or racism.
Yeah.
Like, tell me what you mean.
And they
say the racist thing you're implying.
And I like what you mentioned about the, you know, the this is their universe and that it's being invaded or
mm-hmm.
infiltrated or, you know, that it was their world and it doesn't feel like that anymore because
mm-hmm.
there's a higher percentage of women. But back in the late 70s, early 80s, programming was almost like 30, 35, 40%
yeah.
women.
Yeah.
And then it's decreased over time, not because of you know, men invading women's space, but because of men not allowing women to continue to be in this space.
And even like playing, I mean, in the 70s and 80s, again, when everyone had to go to arcades to play, like, I mean, an arcade was a social place.
Yeah.
Like you all went, you know, like, I mean, you took your girlfriend, you took your boyfriend, you took your best friend, you know, everyone would go and play. And so like you saw same-sex couples, you saw, you know, best friend couple, you know, people together having a good time out. And now we have home systems. And so I think that makes people more insular.
Molly, it was the 80s. You did not see same-sex couples. They were invisible. They were safely closeted.
That's right. I forgot they didn't exist until
the
Clinton administration made them happen.
Yeah. It was their roommate.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's my uncle's friend.
We share a one-bedroom apartment. We're very close.
We're very good friends.
No, well, video games weren't marketed towards just men originally,
right.
Either. It was they're marketed as games for everyone.
You know, like to make money.
I feel like they sat down and said, all kids have quarters.
Yeah.
That's probably what they said.
There's a certain point at which when Nintendo was, you know, blowing up and coming to America, the toy manufacturers in America were getting this game system and trying to figure out how to market it and how to sell it, and they were like, Well, it's not a G.I. Joe and it's not a Barbie. Who do we sell this thing to? I don't know. Boys. Yeah, make it a boys thing.
And that became so pervasive that it when I worked in sales, part of my job was putting our games on Amazon. And the form that comes from Amazon gives you two options for who this toy, this board, this game is, and it's boys or girls. Hmm. And so I was instructed I had to pick boys because
couldn't pick both.
There was no way to pick both. It was one or the other. If you picked, they were like, you have to pick boys. If you pick girls, we won't show up in algorithms when people are searching for games. And so it was like, so all of our games, if you looked at them at the data, when you actually clicked into the information, it would say, you know, for boys. And that's just so crazy to me.
It's how people's biases show up in programming and things like that, and how we can actually get, like, you know, how is your camera app racist? Well,
that's changed, right? I mean, Amazon doesn't.
I haven't put anything into Amazon for 5 years at this point, so I'm not sure. But it was in the metadata that they used for the way that they calculated stuff. It was just a really shitty spreadsheet with a bunch of drop down options for different varying things.
So I've listed a couple of self-published books on Amazon, but those are both
books,
like, one was in 2012 and one was in 2014, and I think it's very different.
Toys is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and games is.
I'm doing a web search, so if I don't say anything for a minute,
that's fine.
I wonder how it is for comics, because Amazon owns Comixology, and you can actually shop and search for a lot of digital comics through Amazon's web front instead of the Comixology web front.
Yeah, lot of this could have changed. Again, this was 5 years ago.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
As of 2015, Amazon had removed the identifier of removed gendering from toys.
2015.
What do you know? That's around the time that I switched jobs.
Yeah.
Finally, Molly Glover's out of here. Fix it.
Yeah.
That crabby feminist bitch has been up our ass for the last 4 years.
Right.
It was this idea that there was that Gamergate spawned and was spawned. You know, you hear a lot about sexual harassment, sexual assault, straight up being covered up by it and not having rapists on staff.
It would be in their best interest.
Yeah.
So Natalie Lawhead, and it's N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E,
Natalie.
If you're looking her up, Natalie Lawhead. So she was from California. She took a job in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote about this on her blog and then tweeted about it. And I want to say about like a month ago or something like that. And so they're calling it Gamergate 2.0.
Of course.
And she called out.
Because
they have no imagination. Well, and because this, you know, that way we can kind of bring it back.
And because of the Gamergate hotel,
again,
I really feel like we need to have a scandal in a different hotel.
Yeah.
Can we have like a scandal in a Hilton hotel or maybe a Motel 6? So then we could have like Gamer 6. Yeah.
Yeah, instead of Gate.
Gate.
Gamerton.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Gamerton.
Gamertree by Hilton.
Anyway.
So she had gotten this job and agreed to work on contract, and then they kept changing the specs.
Yeah.
They kept changing what she had agreed to do and then saying that she wasn't living up to it. But the CEO kept asking her to sign back on, and she kept re-upping her contract. Mm-hmm. She was getting paid very little and was losing her health as a result of it.
Push is fucking disgusting.
And so this guy, Jeremy Suley, who was the soundtrack designer, he was a composer, and he's done a bunch of games, Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic, Skyrim. He started sort of, I guess, getting into her head. He was agreeing to counsel her and help her through this process, but then he was really good friends with the CEO. And when he and the CEO started talking, her friendly relationship with the CEO ceased.
Hmm.
And he started saying that her work was no longer up to snuff when she's actually one of the sort of premier alternative reality gamer designers out there. This guy, Jeremy Suley, raped her and then destroyed her work environment. Right. And she tweeted about it.
Because it's never enough. It's never enough to just rape them.
No,
a
you
woman.
Can't.
You have to then also destroy her and her.
Well, you have to discredit her, because if she's gonna accuse you of rape, then she has to look like she's an unreliable source.
Yep. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, despite all her work and all the hours and the crunch, not push, the crunch involved, she's not credited either. She
wasn't credited on that project, and they didn't pay her the last check either.
Right.
And then she went to take another job with another company in California later on, who he then became friendly with and...
to push her out.
Pushed her out. And I think I don't remember whether or not she did get credit on that one, but she also didn't get paid full scale.
Right.
And so she, years later, this was back in like 2010 and 2012, and years later she decided to tweet about it about a month ago. And lo and behold, the boys' club comes out and defends their own.
Yeah.
More women followed her, came out. Mm-hmm. Following her real, real close.
It's weird. It's like, you know, when you come out about a guy who's engaged in sexual impropriety, it's like you weren't the only one. It's like, he does it more than once because he got away with it. Mm-hmm. So why not do it again?
Him. So it was, so Zoe Quinn, who they go by they, them pronouns,
right.
Which the first time that Zoe Quinn came up, you know, people weren't really paying a lot of attention to or respecting that.
Yeah.
And that was back in 2015. So this time,
because they were part of the original Gamergate scandal. Yeah.
And they named their, abuser, who then, committed suicide. A week later.
Which, of course, then the boys' club was like, look what you did.
You killed him.
You ruined this poor man's life. All he did was this one mistake. And like,
which apparently wasn't just one mistake, because even his sister said, no, he's been troubled.
Oh, my God.
His coworkers.
Troubled.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. His coworkers said, no, actually, we believe Zoe, because he was very difficult to work with. And they distanced themselves from him after the, you know, allegations came out. And then, you know, he killed himself. But they never walked that back. They said, you know, his coworkers said, no, he was a problem.
It's interesting because I was trying to think about, is there a woman's equivalent to this boys' club mentality? This, you know, shut doors and everything. And the closest thing I can come up with is the concept of the broken step. Where women tell each other about men they know of in their circles who are known predators or problems, but don't really go public with it and will close ranks about it because they know that to go public with it is just inviting trouble. And it's kind of hilarious. I mean, horrifyingly, but that the boys' club for men, the idea is, oh, it was just boys talk. Oh, Kavanaugh, you know, he's just doing what we all do behind closed doors. Am I right? Mm-hmm. And like, we're for women. It's like, you know what we talk about behind closed doors? Who's raping us? And like what and who you should stay away from, because maybe he hasn't raped anyone yet, but it's gotten real close and everyone knows
a whole bunch of women are super uncomfortable with that guy.
Yeah. Don't talk to
He's a creep.
Yeah, don't talk to rapey Greg, because he's gonna grab he's always trying to grab your boobs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, thanks, I'll stay away from rapey Greg.
Yeah.
And that's just part of being a woman.
Right.
And like, but I can't think of anything similar where women close ranks and protect each other, even though I know a lot of shitty men think we do that.
Well, I think what happens with, and this gets into like incels and that sort of thing, where men think that women as a whole are this group of people who actively want men to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, clearly you've never been a project manager, because you can't get three people to agree on something, much less an entire, you know, half the population to say, oh, Bob over there, we don't want him to get laid. So everybody stay away.
And at what age do you start having these conversations, Molly?
It's just this innate sense, I guess, that when I see a man, I'm just like, God, fucking trip. Like, I always want men to fail.
You're a woman. Yeah, and
it's
you're
really
naturally...
hard because I work in a male-dominated industry and I am a project manager, but yet all my projects are successful despite all my best intentions for the men on those projects to fail. I try, but my God, the games are so good.
So I can think of an example.
Okay.
But it's against women and not men. It's TERFs.
Oh, TERFs. Yes.
Being exclusionary.
Trans exclusionary radical feminists, right. For those of you who have not heard the term.
We call them farts. Like feminism appropriating reactionary transphobes, actually. Right.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Fart is much better.
Like, when someone says something, you can be like, oh, it smells like farts in here. You sound like a fart. Like, it's perfect.
Farts are, you know, by definition, exclusionary, yep. and trying to keep it, you know, quote unquote, for women. And keep the outsiders out. But again, men aren't the victims of this circumstance. No. It's women again.
In fact, the most victimized of us is the victim of that.
So it's not even like an equivalent. It's just women are, again, the get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, cishet white men are never... the actual target of any kind of outing.
Except clearly Brett Kavanaugh, who is clearly innocent.
It was a coordinated political hit.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know how much you follow ComicsGate, which is what I'm way more familiar with for ComicsGate stuff than the Gamer.
Can we call it Comics 6? I just like that.
Comics Tree 6. By Hilton.
Comics Tree.
It's actually Comics 8. Damn, it's Comics 8. ComicsGate, which is kind of similar. It's, you know, mostly just a bunch of butthurt dudes rallying together to hate women who create and enjoy comics.
Don't you hate that they keep putting stuff in comics that's only for women, like, you know, issues and thinking?
Yeah. But it's been super profitable for a lot of people. Ethan Van Schrier, who is... he used to be someone in comics, and now he's...
like an angry jar of mayonnaise?
He's a fucking... waste.
Yeah.
Not a waste of talent, though, because he was never super talented. Because
you know how mayonnaise is like... like if you put like a spoon in it, that's what he sounds like when he tweets. That's all I can hear.
His kickstarted Cyber Frog comic that, you know, I can't get work because I don't, you know, blah, my views, blah, blah, blah. He did his own indie comic, Cyber Frog, which looks like garbage. He's been taking in money and taking in money and taking in money for like the last 2 years.
With nothing to show for
it. He put out his first issue today.
Aww.
It looks like garbage. And he did like 26 variant covers to spread that money super, super thin.
Yeah.
And I assume, similar to Anita Sarkeesian, that because it took him a while to utilize the money, that people were all over him, right?
The people who he's shitty to, so like good people were, but not his supporters who were angry at Sarkeesian.
People he is orchestrating hate and harassment campaigns against might point it out.
But the people who actually gave to his Kickstarter probably were like, oh, whatever, man.
Yeah.
If you want quality, you got to wait for quality.
Yeah.
Anyone who saw those preview pages or is familiar with his work, I just don't know how they can make the quality argument, but art's subjective, I guess.
Well, this sounds a little bit like the stand-up community, too, doesn't it?
Yes.
For sure.
Shane Gillis.
I can't say anything.
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I got to.
All of these are interesting. I mean, all of these are male-dominated. I mean, the stand-up community is male-dominated. The stories from women involved in that community is I mean... When stuff about Bill Cosby came out, there were women in comedy who were like, everybody knew.
Yeah.
Everybody knew. It wasn't a secret. You got warned about Cosby if you were going to be working with him.
Yep. And the whole, I mean, just this whole idea of he's saying what we can't say anymore. And it's what I love about that is when people get into that argument with any of us, because we literally do a profitable, long-running insult comedy show where we uplift and support our trans, gay, black and white, and all races. I mean, just like no one is made fun of for how they were born in our show.
We don't pick on disenfranchised groups.
And yet we are still insulting, funny, horrific, very offensive.
Good.
But it's not shitty. Like, right. Nick's big main thing is we're assholes, we're not monsters.
It's just that easy.
Yeah.
I will admit I watched the latest Dave Chappelle special on Netflix because I was morbidly curious. And there's a point at which in the special, the audience kind of turns on him.
Mm.
Has this very, very childish reaction to hit the backlash of his last special, which wasn't good either.
Because it was
very transphobic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's like, he throws a fit in the middle of his stand-up special where he's like, they can't tell me what I can and can't say type thing. And the audience is just kind of like crickets.
Oh, boy.
And then you can hear him start to try to get the audience on board with what he's saying. And he has to like work back up to that point to get them laughing again.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's such a disappointment because like at one point he was like an edgy comedian who talked about risky topics like race and really like didn't pull any punches about that sort of thing. But also like all his other views are fucking terrible. Like it's
times
really
have
rough.
Changed too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
and he hasn't grown.
Yeah.
People, I think that's one of the big problems with comedy. People always thought when you're in the comedy community, you talk about the fact that comedy doesn't age well. It's the one. When you go back and watch a comedy from the 1950s, say it doesn't. Very few of them.
Right.
Really resonate at all because it just doesn't age well. And
slapstick is timeless.
I think comedians have the same problem that their comedy is sort of created in a certain era, and they are stuck in that era, and their comedy itself doesn't evolve.
The number one key to good, successful comedy is timing. And that's not just the way you tell the joke. It's when the joke happens. It's the newness of it, I've got jokes that aren't that funny anymore because people don't know who they are about, like a joke referencing someone had a Casey Anthony joke in our cast, but like it wouldn't go over as well anymore because people don't really remember.
Yeah.
Honestly. Right.
It's not like a part of the...
It's not the way it was when it was in the news 24/7.
Right. And there's a good example because that performer kept delivering the joke for years.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to just dump it. You got to move on. You got to write something that's current. You got to write something that makes sense to people who are in your audience now, not people who are in your audience 5 years ago.
Or even longer. Yeah. I think one thing I do think is interesting is with people like, I'm going to butcher his last name and I don't care, Milo Yiannopoulos and Dave Chappelle and people, there are these people who belong to minority groups, but because they're men, they are rising to this like dickhead level of like superiority and, male supremacy, despite belonging to other minority groups and firsthand knowing what oppression feels like. But they are instead glomming onto this idea of real men and being a man and like hating women, which is just so crazy to me. But also, I guess, hooray, like good for rights, I guess, because like, look, if someone who is as outspokenly, in your face, homosexual and like unapologetically black, things like that can, not be white America afraid and white men are like, yeah, that guy speaks for me because we're men. We've come a little ways.
Well, and cishet white men are going to buy it because they're trashing on the people that they do.
It's such a weird time.
Milo is such an insidious example because he lends this air of credibility to the like hard and alt-right groups where it's like, no, we can't be homophobic. Look, we have a gay.
Yeah.
We have the one.
See?
And he's like pretty gay.
And he calls himself
gay
slurs all the time. And,
so I can.
Right. Yeah. And
Dave Chappelle uses the N-word, so I use the N-word. I'm just quoting Dave Chappelle.
He says racist stuff about other races. See, it's cool, though, because he's black.
It's such a,
it legitimizes and kind of, like, desensitizes everyone to that sort of thing and lends this credibility that's, like, really harmful, I feel
It's permission. And it's, and I think what people need to understand is that one person is not permission.
Right.
That's that one person's experience.
It's an anecdote.
And it's not wrong. That's their own experience, but that doesn't make it okay for you.
Also, you don't know Dave Chappelle. You don't know Milo.
Friend.
You don't know them. You feel like you do because that's the nature of performing. But like, you don't, it's just vilification tennis, man. I can't tell you the number of times at the Renaissance Festival, a stranger would come up to me and tell me how small my tits were. And it's like, ha, cool. Yeah, no, that's the joke. Thank you. That's so nice that you like the show, but like this is actually that's harassment. Yeah. Like you you are not a part of this.
We all consent to the verbal abuse we give each other and we're in on that joke together and there's permission there and that's what makes it okay.
You like, "Oh, your wife's such a slut. I bet she's blah 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 blah." It's like, "Hi, I'm right here.
I don't get that.
I'm not property."
Maybe it's different cuz I'm a dude, and a white dude, cis white dude, but what I get after Ville shows, especially when we were out at the Renaissance Festival, was some guy who thinks he loves us because we're dirty, who comes up after and says, "I got one for ya," and then
racist
proceeds to tell
joke.
Me something super fucking racist and inappropriate, or super fucking sexist and inappropriate, and they're like, "Eh, eh?" And it's like, "Oh boy, thanks for the $5." Like, it's rough, but I got that almost after every show.
There's probably, and I've never done vilification tennis.
I wouldn't recommend that experience.
But I would imagine there's a lot of that because a lot of men sort of, and we're back to the boys club thing.
Yeah.
A lot of men look for permission to be awful from other men with that sort of wink and the nudge and the like, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You understand.
You get
right?
it. I mean, I don't have to actually say the racist thing because, you know, we both, we're the same and they're other.
Yeah.
Men that don't give that permission or go against that are, you know, cucks and soy boys. So we don't have to listen to them because they're, you know, performing to get laid because they can't imagine just being a good person and it not being about pussy.
So during one of the panel discussions that I held during the Minnesota Fringe Festival this summer, we were talking about soy boys and one of the local theater producers happened to be in the audience and she hand-stitched me a badge that I can put on my backpack that says soy boy.
Oh, that's amazing.
And
that's
I love it.
Delightful. Yeah.
I haven't put it on my backpack yet because I don't know how to sew. But at some point, I'm probably just going to
some soy boy you are.
You just lost your credibility as a soy boy if you can't sew.
Well, it's funny. So yesterday was Bisexual Appreciation Day. And one of the things I love about it is
Bisexual Visibility Day?
Visibility Day. Thank you. I guess
you're no longer
invisible. I just assumed it was appreciation because I felt so loved. No, but what I thought was so funny is I read this thing where someone said bisexual women are seen as straight and bisexual men are seen as gay because no one can ever imagine that if you're interested in dick, it's not all you want.
Right.
Because it's this, and that is like straight up patriarchy. Like a bisexual woman is straight because, she likes the dick. And if it's a guy, oh no, he's also gay. And it's this like, it's gotta be men. It's the almighty dick. It takes over everything. And it's so, that boys club thing, it's just this, it's a lot.
and if you speak out against it, so like as one of my things in the blog is to give men action steps.
Yeah.
So we talk about each subject, and at the end of it, I'm like, because I never wanted to leave them with like a "you're bad for doing these things."
Right. That doesn't. No one feels good after.
Here's
that.
How we do better.
So I always leave them with an action step.
Yeah.
And one of the things is pretty consistently call it out.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do it online, you know, necessarily where someone says something and you call it out in front of them, make a big show out of it, make sure everybody knows how much of a dick that person is, because they're not going to learn that way. They're just going to be defensive.
Right.
But you can call it in. You can message them. You can say whatever. And I have in the past lost friends over things like that. You know, like there was a guy at a party who told a racist joke and I just looked at the entire room and I said, "Y'all going to allow that?"
Yeah.
Because I'm not. And you need to stop.
Yeah.
And the whole party just stopped.
Yep. Oh. And then you're the guy that ruined the party.
And I'm the guy who ruined the party. But you have, I mean, at some point or another, if you don't say those things, you know, and that's how the boys club helps to dissolve.
Yep, it is.
And if you need to go have female friends or non-binary friends or people who don't look exactly like you to get that perspective, then you have to go do that.
I heard the other day it was like, first thing you should do, go on Twitter or you know, Tumblr, whatever your social media of choice is, and go follow like 50 people that are nothing, that are not your demographic, that are some disenfranchised groups, and like just listen, just read, don't make that a one-way communication just to be exposed to.
Don't
that.
Say things like, oh, I don't feel that way, just so you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that helpful?
How many comments do you see that it's like, this white person wants you guys to know that I'm not okay with racism?
Right.
It's like, okay, cool, Mary. Yeah. <You know? Yeah.
laughs> Thanks, Boomer.
Yeah. No shit.
I think it's valid also to give the advice about for call outs is that if you get called out, because everyone makes mistakes, and we're all learning and we're all doing better. Like if you don't look at your Facebook posts from, you know, like 5 or 8 years ago and have a little bit of a cringe, maybe you haven't grown enough as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get called out, just remember, like, you might want to react defensively, but it's so easy to say, oh, fuck, I'm sorry. Hang on. Let me try to do better.
Yep.
Like, that's so much easier than...
You don't even have to mean it. Just say you're sorry and I'll do better. Like, for real, people are always like, well, I don't want to. It's like, just say it. Just say you're sorry. You'll get...
How hard is
it?
How hard is it?
You don't get to tell someone you didn't hurt their feelings if what you said hurt their feelings. So you should acknowledge that, even if it was unintentional. And then, you know, look at what they said and try to figure out, like, okay, well... How can I not say that? Or how can I work around that? Or how can I, you know, do better?
And if you need to, take some time. Walk away from it.
Hell
look
yeah.
at it. Look at it as if someone else wrote it. Cover up your name with your thumb or something. Mm-hmm. You know, and look at it from a perspective of like, if I were an outsider looking at this and I were reversing some roles here or whatever, you know, how would I feel about it?
God, what a great thing that would be if you could program some sort of like bot filter that took your posts and put them back in your feed with the picture of an old white boomer instead of you. And then like, and then you read it and you were like, fuck this guy. And then it was like, and then when you clicked on it, it was like, ha ha,
how are you?
You just got pants by yourself. Yeah.
Congratulations.
All right. This was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to five questions.
Yay.
Five questions that we
five
have.
Five questions.
And Scott, you have prepared answers to our five questions.
I have to go first?
No. Okay. I'm checking in.
Yes,
see, we know this ahead of time, and the listeners are just now finding this out.
Okay.
So it's very exciting. All right. So question one. Tim, question one.
Question number one, which I sent earlier today and I should remember, and yet I don't. What conspiracy do you find the most interesting or compelling?
Oh, and I do have to go first. Okay.
You are the only one who answers them.
Yeah, we've answered it.
Oh, I'm the only one. Okay, good.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just picked flat earthers, and I didn't want to...
five for you. The listeners don't give a fuck about us. They only want to know about you.
We've answered these questions.
Oh, wow.
They've heard enough from us.
Well, now I'm glad that I wrote them down. I was kind of thoughtful about it, and it wasn't just like thrown away. Okay, so I picked flat earthers. Not just because like they're easy to make fun of, because one of the things... Have you seen Behind the Curve?
No.
I watched it twice in a row.
Wow.
Because it was so engrossing. And you get to the end of it and there's these actual scientists who are like, you know what? These aren't kooks. These aren't crazy people. These are people who got left behind in some way or another. But they're human beings, right? And I don't like the idea of just saying they're loony because, A, it's an insult to loony.
That's me. Hi.
it's an insult to people who do have mental illnesses.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know... it's also discounting their attempts at being human.
Are you sure you watched it twice in a row, or did you just come all the way back around and just kept going?
I don't know how I've never thought of that. But so the thing that I liked about it is that they're actually doing experiments, unlike a lot of other conspiracy theories.
So
like that, because you can't anti-vax test that.
They take pictures.
Your kid
of
either gets measles or they don't, right? But these folks are going out and actually trying to test their theory. One of them tried building a rocket. One of them tried doing a laser across an 8-mile lake. And they discovered the lake curves, you know, and so they're accidentally doing science. And so there's something both beautiful and a little sad about it, because then once they prove themselves wrong, they get to a point where they either have to double down or mm-hmm. lose part of their friends group. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really sad. And so it's a very humbling sort of conspiracy theory because they're doing it to themselves.
It's a good analogy for religion because that happens a lot with religion too, where people start questioning and then they're like, uh-oh.
We've talked to people on this podcast who have left religion, and one of the hardest things about it was leaving that support structure.
Right. Their family?
Absolutely.
All right, question two.
What is your perfect two-week vacation? And as always, money's no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
Right. My criteria for vacations is to go somewhere where I'm some sort of minority, either in language or in physical demographic, what have you.
Sure.
I've always wanted to go to Japan and Cambodia. They've been really high on my list because Cambodia has Angkor Wat, which I've always wanted to go visit. But I also don't want to be like, the tourist who just goes and ruins the space that they're in.
Right.
But to sort of respectfully go there and learn about the history, and same thing with Japan, but for different reasons. They're the way that they've built cities to be transit friendly, and just the fascinating sort of ends of the spectrums that go with those two countries. And I feel like I could do one in 1 week and then one another week.
You could definitely 2 weeks with
2 weeks if money's no object. Absolutely.
That's the thing.
Charter a private plane, get you there. Take one of those jets that gets you there in like hours.
Right. And then I can buy off the carbon credits for
because money's no object.
Hire someone to plant a bunch of trees. And,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Just donate tons of it to
it. Just cancels it directly out.
That's right.
Absolutely.
All right. So question number three. What's the, am I getting that right?
No, it's the movie or book.
What's the movie or book that changed your life and why? And it'll be, if you make it a movie, Tim will be really happy. But I understand if it's a book because I like books better. Oh,
there have been a couple of movie adaptations actually, but I have never seen them. I only read the book,
what's
Brave
the book?
New World.
Oh, okay.
And it was partly because it Aldous Huxley wrote it as sort of like a way to get people a little bit aware, if not a little bit afraid of socialism.
Mm.
And to me, it did the opposite because as a child of the 80s, which I think most of us are to some degree or another, we were supposed to fear communism and socialism.
Oh,
And because all it was this sort of mass of a lack of identity.
Sure.
And that's sort of the way that it was presented. But in Brave New World, he kind of presents socialism that way, but he also, sort of accidentally, introduced us to, polyamory and to vacation time and to having our needs met by the state.
Work-life
and I'm like,
balance.
All of those things sound like ways to be healthy human beings. Like, mm-hmm. Without that book, I don't know that I would have understood jealousy the way that I do. I don't know that I would have understood how a government can be responsible for meeting its people's needs the way that I do. And so I've kind of always looked at it through that lens of like, you can tell me it's crappy, but there are upsides to a lot of different things.
That's
not Nazism, but there are upsides
to a lot of
things.
Star Trek does that for a lot of people too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what do you mean a post-currency society? Oh.
How would that work?
Yeah.
That sounds like garbage. Oh, well, everyone's just fine.
Yeah, you just get food. Whoa.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you also have replicators, so.
Yeah.
Question number four, what is the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
I used to be in a bagpipe band.
Oh! That's so great.
I played snare drum in a bagpipe band.
You played drums in a bagpipe band? You weren't even a pipist. I love it.
I was in the there are two St. Patrick's Day parades in the city of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one everyone knows about that's on Michigan Avenue, and there's the one that very few people know about that's on Western Avenue on the south side of Chicago, where you have a bunch of old Irish immigrants sitting there in lawn chairs in the middle of March with a 24-pack of beer next to them. And the piper's got to take a break every once in a while. They're running out of air. So the drummer's just kind of, we drum a little bit. And this guy cracks a beer and he yells at me, he goes, "Play the fucking pipes!" And I'm like, "Guys, we're going to get beer thrown at us here." I loved it. Going to the band was amazing.
Amazing. How long did you live in Chicago?
From junior high through high school. So
what years were those, out of curiosity? I lived there for a little while.
Oh, yeah? 1990 through 97.
All right. I was there 2002 to 2005.
Okay.
I was on the north side. Yeah, it's the parade. We went down to the parade on Western Avenue and it was a really good time. time. Like
it's
that
a
was
riot.
And my friends are like, that's the real one. You should go to the real one, not the like the glossy
the glitzy,
like
glamoury,
commercial one. Go to the one where everyone's go to the one where you see true Irish sadness. And it's like, yeah.
I think that's about right.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, Nick.
Question five. What is your favorite hangover cure?
A delicate balance of coffee and beer.
Ooh. A kind of beer specifically?
No.
Hair
any kind?
Just something light, you know, like I don't want a stout.
Right.
You know, I want like a lager.
Yeah,
or
maybe
not like
an IPA, nothing with a crazy.
Yeah, I just need something to, because the coffee is going to be too much caffeine at once. I need to sort of very slowly even myself back up to normal.
So temper yourselves with small amount of alcohol and carbs.
A little bit of upper, a little bit of down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then, and then the carbs. And then occasionally like dry toast.
Sure. Yeah.
Dry toast is good for soaking stuff up. I mean, it's really nature's sponge.
It may not
sponge.
Be the most interesting hangover cure, but it's
no,
it's, yeah, it's
that's
my favorite.
That's solid. That's solid.
That's
Thank
why
you.
I put dry toast on top of cat vomit.
Oh, yeah, it just soaks
It'll
right
just
up.
Soak it right up.
That's like a, I think that's like a 50s dish. It's like chipped beef on toast. I dated a guy who was all it's about like chipped beef on toast, and it looks like cat vomit on
it
toast.
It does. It does a lot.
Midwestern aspic is what that
is.
Yeah,
gross.
That
gross.
Disgusting.
It's on also, and I hate to say this, it's also delicious. Anyway.
Cat barf?
Gross.
No, chipped beef on toast. God.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for being here.
Thank you for having
this
me.
Was a really great time. Please come back. I mean, really, anything, anytime you can think of something you want
to
share.
Yeah, now
about,
you know where I live. So
yeah, this was great.
Ominous.
I'll put it in my little black book.
Dun, dun, dun.
A man's guide for appropriate behavior in the 21st century includes stalking Tim Wick.
That is appropriate.
Little known fact.
21st century men.tumblr, right?
Yep. It's the 2-1, not
2-1
spelled
ST.
Out.
Yeah. 2-1-ST, centurymen.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All
it's
right.
been lovely.
We've been Geeks Without God. I think we have a new Patreon supporter, but I'm going to pull it
what?
Up. What? Yeah.
What?
Hold on. No, this is maybe not. Maybe we already said it. I have a bunch of things all selected. No, we don't. We already
never
announced
mind.
Our new Patreon supporter, so never mind.
So
but you
if
know
you
what?
Were super excited,
that
it didn't happen.
That could have been
happen.
You. That could have been your name just now. I could have said your name with my raspy, dulcet voice, and you know, instead we said no name. So
sorry, Frank Whitaker. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
We could have said your name.
That's on you, Frank.
Yeah.
Sorry, Frank.
You know what, Frank? That's the, you know what? Okay, Frank. Okay. I think that... You would love to support us there because it helps us do awesome things like this. You could listen to our episode about Akinkar. You could listen to our episode where we legit do our best to summon a demon. Doesn't
do
work.
Do it, Frank.
I don't know. You
do
could listen
it.
To our episode where we all went to psychics and then we talked about that experience. And we're going to probably go ghost hunting this
ghost
October.
Ghost hunting. We're going to find a ghost.
We're all going to find a ghost and get haunted. And you won't know about it unless you're a Patreon supporter. Any amount allows you access to those. We really appreciate all of our supporters. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Geeks Without God. And it's just everything's pretty great here in Geeks Without God land.
How are you?
I'm great. We have a lot of questions these days, so we're doing pretty well. But if anybody else wanted to answer our five questions, you could send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. This podcast is like a Stephen King book. It just can't end well. with that, I'll say goodnight. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Boys Club sounds a lot more fun than it actually is.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
It's okay, and then everyone was fine.